This is Educating Technology, a podcast about using technology in our schools. Last time, Chris and I talked about backing up VMware virtual machines and installing Microsoft System Center Configuration Manager. This week, we talked the new Apple devices that were recently announced, as well as some new AMD products. If you like what we're doing, you can support us by going to patreon.com/educatingtech and becoming a patron. Now, on with the show.
So, last week, I installed System Center, and you did too. So how far along have you gotten with your System Center installation?
It's installed. That's it. I hadn't had time to do anything else.
I pushed out the client to all the computers that it finds. That has worked really well. And I successfully deployed an EXE installation file with System Center, which did not require reboot, and it just ran through the little commands that you have to set up, and it worked great. I essentially had to do it like I cheat with my bat files. When I make a text document in the C drive that says it installed, and that's what I use as a check. But I use the actual application that it puts in the program files folder as the check. And so basically it checks to see if that exists, and if it doesn't exist, it installs it. And the only problem I couldn't get to work was calling the uninstall. For some reason, that didn't work, but that's not a primary concern. I don't want to get rid of it. I wanted to install it, so I'll play with that again another day. But that's about as far as I've gotten, and I'm kind of digging it, so I like it.
Now, I did get further with the Virtual Machine Manager. I did do some things with that because that was one of the pieces I was really wanting. I just haven't done any of the stuff with the Configuration Manager yet.
Yeah, and I kind of made mention to you this, I guess, yesterday or the day before that when it comes time for new servers,
I'm getting excited about you saying it again right now.
I know. I'm really considering going Hyper-V whenever I get my new servers. I know it's going to be a bit of a challenge converting from VMware to Hyper-V, but it will be nice to see the cost savings, I guess.
Well, one thing that's really cool, Virtual Machine Manager, the part of System Center, will automatically connect to your ESX host and could do the conversion and import into Hyper-V for you.
Well, I guess I need to install that then, too.
In fact, right now, you can install Virtual Machine Manager and manage your ESX environment with it.
That's pretty fancy.
Yeah, it's a cool piece of software.
But I think I'm really leaning heavily towards going Hyper-V just because, I've talked to you about the past issues that I've had with it before, and you said that the platform is a lot more mature now than what it was back then when I had those issues. And just having those cost savings of not having to renew that VMware subscription every year, that'd be a nice little $2,000 saved every year. I mean, that's a lot of money over time.
And you get a lot of features exposed through PowerShell that'll let you do all sorts of stuff you can imagine.
And more than likely, I probably won't even need all of those fancy features to pull off what I'm doing now. So no. I just need to connect to my SAN and serve up the VMs.
Yeah, and that's pretty easy. And in fact, you don't even have to cluster to do things like have redundant copies and things like that. You can actually just have replica partners that spin up when it goes down if you wanted to have 100% up down.
Wow. Just if I had the money to be able to afford that, it'd be great.
Hey, I will give you some backup software for free, though.
Hey, I know you're working on some of that. I guess our conversation about backing up some VMs last week kind of got you sparked some interest in actually completing your software.
Yeah, I always had the script tools that worked really well, but I'm adding a ton of features now in a GUI, and it's kind of like an unholy marriage that I have going with this application. It's a Node.js front-end application using Node WebKit that I'm communicating to the back end over PowerShell.
Sounds like Frankentosh.
it's interesting, but I talked to some developer friends of mine, and they've done very similar things with as far as like Python and Perl kind of applications with their server stuff and their data center. So it's not that out of the ordinary. It's just not a normal desktop application.
So is it Electron?
No, it's Node WebKit.
Because we how we love our Electron apps. Mm-hmm. But while we're on the subject of Microsoft, let me tell you about a bug that I found.
Oh, dude, this is a good one.
In their defense, I am using a version of Windows that apparently is not available anymore because of certain installation bugs that it had. But if you're going from a clean install, then there's really no problem why you shouldn't be able to use it. And so I use it. I use the Windows 10 1809 which is the latest release of Windows 10, to install some new machines that we have gotten, or if I need to wipe something out, which I've done a couple times. And apparently our Sophos Cloud antivirus, Edge, Microsoft Edge, will not work when you have Sophos installed. And it has to do with their web detection intelligent service or something that they have going. And what's really funny is, and I'll leave the link to this in the show notes, that the KB article that Sophos has, the number one solution is just to use another browser.
Well, you know, in Microsoft's defense on this, I do think this is because Edge actually runs 100% in Sandbox.
Yeah, and Sophos is probably doing something that Edge doesn't like. And so basically when you open Edge, it just basically says that it like cannot connect to any web page. And SSL errors and everything else. It's just kind of weird.
It's just not cool the way it errors. I mean, it leads you nowhere.
Yeah, in fact, I wiped a machine out 2 times trying to fix it. And I was like, okay, it's doing it again. And I don't know why. And it's like, what happened after I joined this to the domain? Because it wasn't working before I joined it to the domain. And then I joined it to the domain. I was like, okay. So it's got to be some kind of policy. And you were helping me. It's like, do you have any policies that are affecting WMP apps? And I was like, no, I don't. I don't have AppLocker or anything like that running. And then I was like, Sophos installs. Sophos has a web filter built into it that I don't even have enabled, but it installs the services. And so I disabled all the Sophos services after I turned off tamper protection, which is kind of a hassle because it's all web-based. And so you have to wait for Sophos to actually get the policy from the web. And so it was kind of a hassle. And then when I started stopping the web services, I stopped each one of them one at a time until I found the one that was doing it. And it started working. I was like, all right. And so I put in a ticket with Sophos, and they sent me a KB article that apparently this has been broken since the beginning of October. So
are they working on it?
They say that they're waiting on Microsoft to release an update for something.
Why is Microsoft responsible for fixing something with Sophos?
I have no idea. It doesn't make any sense. They said that they discovered a bug, and it's in Microsoft's whatever version of 1809 they have in the Insider program right now, and it's working there, and so they're just waiting for the Insider program version of 1809 to be public. So
okay, well, that's cool.
I'm sure I'll get it as a cumulative update or something like that.
You know, it'd be one of those things, you know, where it has to download 30 gig of updates before it can just restart and fix Edge.
Yeah, but nobody really uses Edge except one person in our school district, and he happens to be the top dog of the school district. But luckily, right now, he is not on 1809 because it's not being pushed out with WSUS or by Microsoft yet, and so he's not going to be affected by the bug. So I'm at least okay right now. It's just kind of annoying, you know.
Yep. I'm using Edge right now.
Of course you are.
Part of my Microsoft test.
Is it on that new foldable Galaxy phone?
No, it is not on that new foldable Galaxy phone, but being that it's going to be so long before they actually make it to market, they said months, which tells me it's less than a year, which sounds like 11 months to me when I hear things like that.
Yeah. Okay, so let's actually talk about something that is come to market.
yeah.
And the obvious elephant in my room, since we kind of missed last week. Thank you for that, by the way. I needed to had to take care of some things. But Apple released some new things, and I'm a little disgruntled about all of it. First off, the new iPad Pro, gorgeous. Simply a gorgeous device. Very pretty. I like the home button being gone. It took me all of 3 minutes on my iPhone XS to figure out how to not use a home button, and I could go, and I'm fine without a home button. Works great.
Now, on the iPad thing, and I was actually very impressed by the Photoshop demo on the iPad. That was an incredible demo.
It was.
I don't think
it
people
really
realize how difficult that workflow was.
I mean, this new iPad is pretty powerful. The only problem is this iPad's got some serious hardware in it, but the OS isn't, like, taking advantage of it. I mean, somebody tweeted today, it's like, hey, we got this fancy new iPad Pro, the fastest processor in an iPad, it's a beautiful screen, still can't open the school manager webpage in Mobile Safari. The Apple School Manager page. You still have to do it from a desktop.
That's like buying a Ferrari and having the governor set at 35.
Yeah, it's like, why can't we have a desktop version of Safari on the iPad Pro, especially the 12.9 one? I mean, even my 10.5 one would be fine with a desktop version of Safari. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I wonder if trying to make iOS for both phones and tablets is maybe crippling the tablet a little bit, stopping. I mean, even my 10.5 iPad Pro is pretty powerful. It's a pretty powerful machine. It can do a lot of things that I didn't think were possible on a tablet. And just think now it can do even more on these new ones.
But Apple solved this problem years ago when they did their universal binaries. I mean, they've already solved this problem.
Well, they're solving it again, but they're solving it in the wrong direction. They're solving they're it where you can down. Run iOS apps on macOS. And so it's the wrong way. I mean,
yeah. And I hate to say this, Microsoft actually did it right with universal apps. It's just nobody wrote any.
Yeah, that was Windows Mobile's downfall to begin with, was just there were no apps.
But I am happy that I can make my Android look and run like Windows Mobile now. So
I just don't understand why Microsoft just won't build an Android phone with the default Microsoft launcher. I just don't know why they
actually do that. They sell in the Microsoft stores Galaxy phones with the Microsoft launcher and the Microsoft tools loaded on them.
What about without the Samsung stuff loaded on them?
Well, you can't do that.
That's the thing. They just need to make their own
golden fork it.
Vanilla version of Android with their stuff on it. And that way they can get the app store that they needed and the pretty interesting UI that everybody loved but didn't want to use.
Yeah, I mean, I'm using a launcher for Android called Launcher 10, and I really think that Microsoft just needs to go ahead and buy this out and just complete it because, man, I feel like I'm rocking my Lumia 950 again.
Just with two cracks going down the screen.
Actually, there's about four now.
But my complaint with the iPad Pro is... Well, my complaint with all three of the new devices, the MacBook Air, the iPad Pro, and the Mac Mini, is the price, man. They keep raising the prices on things. In fact, all they seem to care about is their average selling price now, because they've even announced that, and now granted, they were like the last holdouts of the people who actually do it, but they're going to stop announcing how many iPhones and iPads they sell every quarter, and just by go with the price, how much the money they made.
Well, the numbers have stagnated. I mean, we've reached a peak penetration in this market.
I really
not
think
any
so.
More to sell.
But I mean, but I just feel like Apple's pricing their users out, you know? I don't know. I just feel like it's a little hostile. I don't know.
Years ago, back when Jobs was still running the company, he said that he would rather have a smaller customer base with higher profit margins. And maybe that's what they're wanting to focus back onto. Maybe they feel that they've gotten too many customers and they can't focus. Because let's be honest, is the attention to detail as good as it was when Jobs was running it?
No, it's not. No. And you know why I think you're wrong in this?
Oh, I can be wrong. I'm wrong all the time.
You're wrong in this because they're pushing their services division. And their services division is for iOS and macOS owners. And so they're pushing this new television streaming thing. They're pushing Apple Music, which, I mean, you can get on Android, but I'm sure that's a miserable experience. I mean,
it's about as miserable as iTunes on Windows.
I mean, you got your iCloud and Apple Music and their new streaming service, and they're going to want all of that. They want to push that and start making money off of that. But if they push out their customers by raising their prices so much, what's the point in putting so much? What was the point in putting $10 billion behind the streaming TV platform? And so I just don't get it. I mean, I get that the cost of stuff is going up, but also the cost of stuff is going down. I've never been able to see a 500 gig SSD for $84, and you can do that now, on sale.
But I think what's telling a lot though is the iPhone, not the one with the highest resolution screen, the one with the 720p screen.
Yeah, the 10R.
What is up with that?
That's a moneymaker right there. That's
going to
be.
And the price is still there. I mean, it's still way up.
But it's just like, I don't know. They want their profits high. And I just.
They got it.
I mean, I was really wanting the MacBook Air to stay at that $999 price point because to me, that's where it belongs. Because, I mean, it's $100 away from the MacBook.
I mean, and let's be honest, it is not nearly as capable a device as the MacBook.
I mean, no, it's not. And that's what's weird. It's like people are saying that the one port MacBook is actually better than this brand new MacBook Air. And I'm trying to wrap my head around that on why, because the only difference really between the two is the MacBook Air has a 7-watt processor and the MacBook has a 5-watt processor. So I'm just trying to, so the MacBook Air is going to get a teensy bit more power out of the processor than the MacBook is. But I mean,
yeah, they still chose a Y processor.
Yeah. It's still like that I call it a mobile processor, really, because it's for that thin form factor.
Yeah, it's for a fanless design, and they went form over function this time.
And I just don't understand. I know Retina displays are kind of expensive, and I know the Touch
ID.
High
DPI.
I mean, but it's like, I'm confused by their lineup now, to be honest with you. What do I buy? Do I buy the MacBook, or do I buy the MacBook Air and get one extra port? Or do I buy the MacBook Pro without the touch bar, which you get two ports?
I think you completely ignore the MacBook Air's existence, to be honest, if you're an administrator of any kind.
But people on Twitter are like raving about this machine. This is the computer I've been waiting for. I'm like, how? It's not. I mean, well, in theory it is, because we've wanted a MacBook Air at the $999 price point with the Retina display is what we've been wanting. And a decent processor. I mean, dual core processor. I mean, come on.
Those processors are slower than processors that came out like in 2012.
I bet the new iPad Pro blows that MacBook Air out of the water.
Oh, hands down. I mean, let's take for example my $199 Lenovo laptop with a fourth gen Intel in it. It's a dual core, but it blows that thing out of the water still.
I mean, I just don't get their choices. I mean, I'm not a member of the Church of Thin and Light. I want a bigger battery and I want some more power. I mean, because I was kind of excited about the Air when it was announced, because I was like, hey, this might be more in the price range of what the school can afford whenever it's time for me to upgrade a new laptop. Or if I wanted one for the house, this might be a little bit better than the $2,500 MacBook Pro. But then the processor specs came out, and I'm like, oh, geez, why? And then you don't even get really any choices. They're treating the new MacBook Air like the iPad, where you can't even upgrade the processor. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, the only thing you can change is, like, the storage you want.
And that's all soldered on. Everything's soldered on.
Yeah, you can't change anything unless you buy the new Mac Mini.
Dude, that one was the most disappointing for me.
That when they said that $799 price point, I'm like, wow, I'm glad Space Gray Aluminum is worth an extra $300.
I mean, this is an i3.
But it's an i3. Quad-core i3, though.
It's an i3. I mean, this is like, that quad-core i3 is about as fast as a Core 2 Q6800 from pre-core days.
I mean, and what's happening is their customers are not educated in processors. They just say, hey, quad-core i3, it's faster than what I'm rocking. I told somebody on Twitter or a Discord chat that I'm a part of about my Apple podcast. I was like, should I buy this or should I just keep using my quad-core 2012 one? I was like, just keep your quad-core 2012 one. You're not getting any advantages other than maybe some faster flash storage.
And that's the thing, though. I mean, Apple takes so long to upgrade these things that, yes, it is an improvement over the previous version of the exact same thing.
But it's already outdated when it comes out.
It's so far behind the market.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. You can get probably a Dell Optiplex, which is similar in size, like the little micro tower that's like twice the power for like a little bit more than the cost of it.
Well, you remember I sent you a thing about building the iMac, an iMac clone, not an iMac, a Mac Mini clone on Newegg to their highest spec'd in one. Because here's what's really crazy.
$4,200 for the maxed out. For a Mac Mini, $4,200.
What are they thinking? Now, here in there, I could not find a stick of RAM as large as theirs, as slow as theirs. I had to get a faster memory to even try to do a comparison build.
God, it's just ridiculous. $4,200.
Yeah, for a machine that's kind of capable.
That's going to sit on the shelf for another 2,000 days.
Oh, I mean, it's not like you could throw in extra components to do anything. What, are we going to throw everything on Thunderbolt and watch it choke?
Yeah, we're going to put it on Thunderbolt 3 and run eGPUs.
Which are stupid.
E-hard drives and e-fans and e-RAM and e-everything.
Well, they need to ditch the Thunderbolt train. 40 gig with the latency that it has is just not good enough. I do have an upgraded spec they could use now from a three-letter company.
AMD?
Yes.
We're getting there. I'll give you your five minutes in just a few
I'm
minutes.
I'm
But I was also in that chat. I was like, name one other company that's using Thunderbolt. And they were like, well, Dell uses it in some of their on their Latitudes. I was like, why don't they just, I don't understand. Just ditch Thunderbolt and just stick with USB-C.
It's the same thing that they did with FireWire back in the day.
I mean, it's like, it's cool that Dell's using it, but it's like, okay, so you're going to pay three times more for an external hard drive that connects over Thunderbolt 3 than you would if you bought one that connected over USB 3, which is still fast enough for an external drive.
Which is still faster than the drive can shoot the data.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, but you're going to pay three times the cost just so you can get a little rounded connector that says Thunderbolt 3 on it.
It's the same physical connector.
Yeah, and so I just don't get Apple sometimes. I mean, I love my MacBook and my iPad and my iPhone, but I just don't know, man. It's like maybe going Hyper-V is my way of turning to the dark side.
Well, I mean, it was turning to the dark side for me because, you know, I'm a big open source guy and now I'm running Hyper-V.
But I mean, everything they raised the price on. They raised the price on the Apple Pencil. They raised the price on the LTE premium if you bought the Wi-Fi over LTE model. They raised that an extra $10. The keyboard cover got raised an extra like 10 or 20 bucks, something like that. The iPad itself got raised $150.
See, that's just way too much.
And then you know what really, really irks me about it is you can still buy the iPad Pro 10.5 a year and a half ago model for the same price as what they were selling it for when they released it.
No. Didn't it go up from the original selling price?
The middle tier and the upper tier went up an extra $50 from when they originally released it. The base model tier 32 gig stayed at $649.
Think still too much.
I mean, it's the same thing as the Mac Pro still selling for the original $3,000 or whatever that it was released at 3 years ago.
Goodness gracious. Wait, they did skip over that. Why did they skip that product?
Because they're still working on the new modular Mac Pro, I think.
Are they going to do some proprietary garbage again? Can we just get the old Mac Pro? You know, people that are buying the Mac Pro don't care what it looks like. They need a powerful machine.
Yeah, it's going to be sitting underneath a desk anyway.
Yeah. Well, you couldn't put the trash can under the desk. It'd catch on fire.
Or you might actually try to put trash in it. So I think they're still they've talked about that, but you know, they made the Mac Mini Pro because they turned it space gray. So, I mean, apparently that's what you do if you want something to be considered pro. You change it space gray.
When are they going to reintroduce the anodized aluminum? You remember the old iPods that were aluminum with all the colors?
Yeah, I do. And you know what's really funny? The Mac Mini and the new MacBook Air. Somebody put this on Twitter too. It is made from 100% complete garbage.
Absolutely.
Because it is made from the leftover aluminum from the iPad Pro. After they formed the case of the iPad Pro, they used the leftover aluminum to make the Mac Mini enclosure and the MacBook Air enclosure. So it is made by 100% garbage.
I do appreciate that move. I mean, it's very smart. And they do have some really good metallurgy that they've developed over the years, but
it's just a little disappointing.
Did it really cost that much more to recycle garbage?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I appreciate the upgrades. I mean, the MacBook Air looks phenomenal. I mean, it's got everything I would want in a laptop. I mean, Retina screen, Touch ID. I mean, everything, except for the price. I really wanted it to come in at that $999 price.
And it needs a quad core, golly.
I know. It's like, I've made the comment, it's like, it's 2018. Nobody should be buying dual cores anymore.
They shouldn't exist.
My iPhone is in a dual core processor.
I was about to say, Apple won't put a dual core in their least expensive iPhone. Why is a professional workstation using dual cores?
There's no telling. I mean, their stuff is pretty. I'm glad they updated it. It's just, and honestly, yes, I will probably buy an iPad Pro in about 4 or 5 years when mine is time to be replaced. Because I held on to my other one for about 3 or 4 years, and then I bought this one, and so I'll do the same with this one. So it's like, my next iPad Pro is going to be really nice and really expensive because the price is only going to continue to go up.
And that's cool. I mean, you actually use them.
I try.
You try. I love it.
Until I try to access a web page that tells me to go on my desktop to access it.
Oh, gracious. So, well, that's just because Apple has a garbage browser now.
So, and I was really also, I mean, I know we just got a refresh, so it really wasn't time for the education iPad. Because I'm getting some more of those, I think, Ian. I think I'm getting about 35 more of those. And so I'm kind of glad they didn't refresh those because I still like that model. And that, to me, is the iPad sweet spot, really. The $299 model that we can get for education, it's really a good iPad, believe it or not. I mean, so.
Yeah, I just got a box of 10 of them in today.
It'll be interesting when they take the home button away from that model.
Oh, goodness.
How these kids are going to make right, that transition.
Now, I do have a request, Apple. Please sell an edition for education markets that retain the home button for those special needs children that have the assisted technologies and all that stuff enabled.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean,
we do need that tactile button for that group.
Absolutely. I mean, even for like non-special needs kids, I mean, the button is just better.
It's synonymous with how the iPad's been for so long.
Yeah.
And with that population group, small changes like that can be devastating.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, even my kid doesn't like to use my iPhone. He's like, I don't know how to use yours. I was like, buddy, just swipe up from the bottom. No, I want to use mom's. It's got a button. So, I mean, kids like buttons. So,
yeah.
Well, really, her Amanda's isn't a button. It's a fake button that makes you think it's a button. It's not really a button. But it makes the illusion of a button. So,
button. Who's got the button?
I mean, I get why they take it away, because they're removing a point of failure.
They're increasing screen real estate,
and you can turn on the on-screen button. I mean, if you really needed to, but like you said, some of those kids just need the tactile button to know that they actually pressed it. So,
mm-hmm. Or they don't have fine motor skills enough to do gestures.
Yeah, and some of those gestures are kind of hard too.
Yeah, I mean, they were hard back when Palm did them.
Yeah, in the card interface.
Yeah.
And the edge-to-edge screen.
Yeah. Wait, hold up. This has all been done before. In 2008.
You know, technology makes like a full circle. I mean.
Yeah, it has.
We go from, really that circle's changed again. We go from mainframes and terminals to full-blown desktops back to VDI clients.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a spiral at this point, I guess.
I know, yeah. So now we're on to...
Oh, speaking of Palm, man, they're just a walking joke now. So, you know, Palm, they made their own platform, whatnot. They sold it, whatnot. So Palm's back, and they have a device. And apparently, Palm makes cell phones for other cell phones now.
I think I saw that.
It's ridiculous. So if you have an opportunity, people, go look up Palm's new device and laugh. I mean...
Their WebOS actually ended up inside of a television. So.
Yeah, and it's a really good platform for that. And they have an open source version you can install on like Raspberry Pis and whatnot. But yeah, Palm makes smartphones for smartphones.
All right, so I've ranted about Mac and Apple enough. So tell me, here you go. As we round out this little show this week, hit me with your AMD stuff,
dude.
All the new stuff.
Well, AMD, they had their Next Horizons event, which was geared towards data center and those kind of things. And speaking of core counts, yeah, they're not dual cores here. So AMD was showing off their new Rome EPYC processors, which are based on the Zen 2 architecture. And yeah, 64 cores in a single socket. So yeah, 64 cores, the same power usage as the 32 core. Which is amazing, because they actually are releasing these on the 7-nanometer process, and there's a ton of huge internal upgrades on them. They've moved into, and I was actually wrong on this. I thought they were going to have an active interposer on the CPU design, but they didn't. They instead went with a chiplet model, where they have a central I/O chip that's actually manufactured back on 14 nanometers, because things don't really scale as far as shrinking the process and as far as power utilization and speed on those kind of things. So they have a 14 nanometer I/O chip that handles like memory controllers and whatnot, has the Infinity fabric connecting the other chips in there. And then they have all the CPU and compute dies in 7 nanometer around it. So, and the first one that they showed, they had 8 compute dies on it. And each one of those was an 8 core, which is pretty cool. I mean, because that was telling us that on the AM4 platform, we're about to get 16 core chips too. But
yeah, we're putting dual core processors in a $1,200 laptop.
Yeah, but what's really really neat about this though is the improvements that they've made into Infinity Fabric are astounding. Where the first generation Infinity Fabric was really cool, and it connected everything and let them scale basically indefinitely, hence the name. It was only running at about 48 gigabits a second. Gen 2 Infinity Fabric, over 200.
That's a big improvement.
It's huge. So, I mean, one of the things that they also introduced with that, using the Infinity Fabric, they also introduced the world's first data center. I'm going to go ahead and preface that because there are others. Data center GPU running on 7-nanometer process. And this is, again, Vega. This is their machine intelligence and their learning stuff. But they put the Infinity Fabric technology into the GPU as well. So you can have that 200 gigabit throughput connecting multiple GPUs to operate as a single GPU, which is really, really cool. Now, am I going to get one here? Probably not. Do I need 59 teraflops of computing? Well, heck yeah, if I'm mining, but no, I'm probably not going to get those. And this is just, this is, in my opinion, the Vega that they wanted to release originally. Oh, and they also are PCI Express 4.0 now. First ones.
There you go.
Which is cool. Twice as fast as PCI Express 3.0 because that's just how it scales.
So at what point is Bitcoin just going to buy AMD and rename it the Bitcoin processor?
Nah. Well, I mean, it's just, I mean, these GPUs are incredible for machine learning. I mean, the fact that they're getting 59 teraflops.
I mean, that's kind of a... This is kind of what brought the whole conversation about the Thunderbolt and the Dell in that Discord chat that I was in, because I was like, why won't Apple just drop Intel, put in a Ryzen, and drop the price by considerable amounts of money? And the guy was like, Thunderbolt. I was like, look.
Hey, and what did I send you?
You sent me some guy that did a DIY solution to make Thunderbolt work on an AMD.
Works on AMD.
But, I mean, even if they just dropped it and stuck with USB-C, who would care? Who cares?
Or if they want to get crazy, introduce an Infinity Fabric connection.
Yeah, and with the same form factor.
Well, I mean, yeah, with the same form factor, you know, you wouldn't get 200 gigabits because I think it's like 40 pins that they're using to accomplish that on Infinity Fabric 2. But, man, it's incredible.
I don't know. AMD does some incredible stuff. And now, see, Intel will announce some new cool stuff, and nobody will ever see it.
Well, the thing is, Intel still hasn't got their 10-nanometer manufacturing process done. So their limit that they can do on monolithic dies right now is 28 cores. They can't get over that because the way they're manufacturing these, they're actually manufacturing these as 48-core chips. Only 28 are coming out good. I mean, it's a change in design of how they've done things. And AMD did this in the past. They tend to do this. They do these really cool innovations, and then they stagnate. I'm really hoping they don't stagnate this time. Lisa Su seems to do a good job. But back in the day when the Pentium 4s were around, right after the Pentium 4s, they introduced a thing called hypertransport when they moved the memory controller off of the front side bus and into the CPU. And that was huge. And it was made them that much faster then, and then they quit doing anything, and then Intel went did the same thing and blew them out of the water for 8 years.
Yeah.
They seem to have an 8-year cycle.
But it's like, not to take it back to Apple, but it's like a lot of people blame the lack of Mac refreshes all the time because Intel doesn't make stuff at scale for them. It's like, well, Apple just needs to switch to something else, you know?
Well, here's something that I find really interesting. What was the GPU that Apple put in all their stuff?
They put in Radeon, yeah.
They put in Vegas.
Yeah, and the new MacBook Pros that they just came out with 4 months ago are actually getting Vega GPUs.
Yeah, Vega 56s. It's their low-end Vega, but it's still a Vega. But what that means, though, is these AMD APUs that are quad-core, 8-thread, with the built-in GPU, that GPU's a Vega. They already got all the driver infrastructure done. They could literally drop this in and it would work.
Yeah, but Thunderbolt.
Well, and I think there's one other thing that's holding them back.
Once they get rid of the headphone jack off of everything, then they'll have no reason to.
Well, they use one piece of Intel technology that AMD doesn't have. AMD has their own. But a lot of stuff Apple uses QuickSync for video decompression and compression and all that. And yeah, they would have to rewrite a lot of their software for that.
Well, and they don't care about the Mac, so they won't do that. So,
well, yeah, I guess the Mac's going to be running on an A13X before long anyway.
Always. I mean, in fact, I think somebody said like in 2020 that's going to be available. You know,
which, that's cool. Go for
it. And I really won't have a problem with that because I think that's actually going to be a pretty phenomenal machine.
Yeah, I don't have any problems with ARM
chips. But they'll probably price it up to like $1,800 or so.
but it'll have more than two cores.
That's true.
All right, so that's our show for this week. For links and show notes for this episode, visit educatingtech.net/53. You can also find links to past episodes at educatingtech.net. You can send us any questions or comments or concerns to educatingtech@gmail.com or on Twitter with educatingtech. You can also tweet out using the hashtag Wow. You can even tweet out using the hashtag AskEducatingTech, and with some magic of IFTTT, or if this, then that, IFTTT is more fun to say, and Google Sheets, we'll be able to see those. So we'll be able to get any of your questions, and we can start doing a segment or whatever at the end of our show where we kind of answer questions or whatever, if that's what you want to do. But to see what Chris is up to, you can follow him on Twitter at @feeks, and I am at @twistofmatt. And if you like what we're doing, you can support us by going to patreon.com/educatingtech. And that's it. We'll see you later.
See you later, Matt.